If you have a green thumb or have always wanted one, then get ready for Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, hosted by Ken Anderson, along with George Allman. Garden Talk aims to introduce new ideas, help solve problems, and keep you up to date on the latest developments in the nursery and landscaping industry. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
Good morning, San Diego. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I am Ken Anderson along with George Allman and our guest, John Clements. And we're going to be talking to you for the next hour about all kinds of stuff going on in your yard and garden. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Let's see, to start out today, we do have classes in both stores today in San Diego at 9 o'clock, Fall Fruit Tree Care with Tyler Trimble. Very popular class. Get there early. Tyler does a fantastic job. He's probably forgot more about fruit trees than I ever knew. So if you have questions on how to grow them, that is one fantastic class for you to catch. At 9:30 in Poway today, we have Winter Rose Care with James Flynn. Also a great class. That's going to give you everything you need to know about taking care of your roses this time of the year. You know, that's the other thing that you should start thinking about. You don't necessarily have to do it yet, but dormant spraying is right around the corner.
It is.
As things start to go dormant, or if it turns out to be a warm winter, which I think we have a La Nina this year, so I don't, I can never keep track of whether that means it's going to be a warm, dry winter or a cold, wet winter or a warm, wet winter or a warm, dry winter. It seems like every time they announce that it's going to come up, it seems to change as to what it's going to do. And now I don't even remember what I was talking about.
Dormant spring.
Yeah, dormant spring. So if it does turn out to be warm and the plants don't go completely dormant before it's time to dormant spray, go ahead and dormant spray. They'll go dormant. It'll usually knock the foliage off of them at that point.
That is one of the tasks in the garden too that I find is far too easy to procrastinate on. Mm-hmm. And you think, oh, I'll wait, or it's going to rain. And the next thing you know, and really you should spray as soon as all your leaves drop. That's the first opportunity to get it done. As soon as all the leaves fall, start your dormant spraying, because it's so easy to procrastinate. And then, you know, a month or 6 weeks has gone by and you've missed an opportunity. And really you want to do three times.
Ideally.
Well, if I may, for clarity, when you say dormant spray, are we talking about the horticultural oil or the fungicides?
Both.
Well, both. Okay. Yeah. And you can mix both. It's convenient for certain to mix both. And there are certain products that you can mix both the oil spray and the copper oil or,
liquid cop. If you do the Monterey, for example, you can make those mix.
Those do mix. Yeah. You have to be careful. Not all do, but as long as you're careful about reading your label, you can mix them and save a little time.
Yeah, back in the day, it was lime sulfur and Volk oil.
Oh, my goodness. And remember how bad lime sulfur smelled?
Oh, it was terrible.
Oh, it was nasty stuff.
It was really bad.
That goes to your point when you said if the leaves haven't fallen yet, you can spray and they will fall. They don't fall if you do copper, and they don't fall if you do hort oil.
Well, hort oil, no. Right.
Or daconil.
Or, yeah, any of those, they don't fall. Yeah. But with lime sulfur, when you did it, defoliated your trees.
Yeah, that was the end of the foliage. The other thing, too, during dormant spraying season, clean up all the old foliage, especially peach trees and nectarines and things like that.
Roses
in the prunus family. Yeah. Get all of that out of there, because that's going to take a lot of the fungus spores that fell out of the tree away from the tree. And don't put it in your compost pile either. Throw it away. Put it in your green recycling bin and get rid of it.
Same situation with petal blight on camellias. If you leave your infected old spent blooms from your camellias on the ground, that will just perpetually infect your soil. And so it splashes back up. So one of the things I like to do is make sure I'm very tidy about removing any infected blossoms. And then I'll put a fresh layer of mulch down every time so that then I'm reducing
encapsulate that. Yeah. Yeah. Since I don't have camellias in my yard anymore, that's one thing I haven't had to deal with, but it can be very frustrating.
Yeah. You have beautiful blooms and they just turn brown
and fall off. Which actually camellias and azaleas, well, camellias should be they're starting to bud up now.
They are. Some of them are plumping up.
We have two. One of them is flowering right now. It's an apple blossom.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, when we were in Northern California, the Sasanquas were starting to were starting to bloom.
Yeah, Sasanquas are budded up nicely now, and, and some are starting to bloom here.
Yeah, yeah. it's gonna be about that time. Let's see. When we were talking about classes, up in the in Balboa Park, there's really not much going on for the month of November. Things will start picking up again with December nights, which I think is the first
weekend in December.
First weekend in December, and then
the Botanic Building at Balboa Park will be open for December nights, which is exciting. Yeah, that is going to be the opening date.
Oh,
it'll be actually be during that weekend for December nights.
Well, I'm going to have to make a point of going up there and seeing it.
And it's has lights now at night, which is an addition. It was previously never lit at night, and so it'll actually. I don't know if they're going to have it during the day and evening, but it will be open for that weekend.
I'll have to check that out. I'll have to check the dates for it too. But I know the zoo is all decked out for the. Mm-hmm. For the holidays, we're going. I think it's next Friday is the members opening. We're going to go and check that out. They always do a very nice job around around the holidays
for
that.
Jungle Bells.
Jungle Bells. That's that is it. Yeah, that is the one. See, the 11th coming up is Veterans Day, and George, I think you were the one that explained. The differences. Veterans Day is to honor all who served.
All veterans who have served.
Who have served. Memorial Day is to honor those that have fallen.
Correct.
In service of their country. And Armed Forces Day is to honor all that are serving.
Currently serving. Correct.
Yeah. Yep. So I was going, a long time ago, I was going through some of our archive stuff, and I found a letter that had been sent to my grandfather. Dated 7th of May, 1945. So one day before VE Day. And it was from Private William Simons, United States Marine Corps Reserve, Marine Night Fighter Squadron 533, which is still operational back on the East Coast. And it says, this gives you a little bit of an insight into as to what some of the, what some of our people were doing at that time. Dear Walter, this letter will probably surprise you quite a bit, but I thought you might be interested in the whereabouts of some of your ex-employees. It's a bit difficult to write out here, for there are so many things that we are not allowed to tell about. In fact, just about anything that is interesting are the type of things we can't talk about. On the way over, we saw a bit of the Hawaiians. We stopped for three days, and I was able to go ashore for two of them. Honolulu, to me, was quite a disappointment. It looked about like the poor section of any large city. The people themselves furnished quite a bit of interest. However, it seems that every nationality imaginable as a representative living there. On any street corner downtown, you can see everything from Chinese to Eskimo. Some of the natives with a little oriental cast to them were very attractive. Islands themselves are quite beautiful. They rise to great heights out of the water in sheer cliffs. The growth on these islands is very abundant. Plants and flowers of all descriptions seem to be growing everywhere in great profusion. Surf cascades over coral formations and comes washing up onto the beaches. As we entered Pearl Harbor, we crossed many coral reefs that gave the water many pale pastel shades of aquamarine, as in deep contrast to the dark midnight blue of the ocean that we had seen for many days. Our ship was well armed and gave us every confidence in our ability to get out of any scrape we might encounter while en route. We experienced no difficulties the entire trip in the way of enemy vessels or storms. The ocean voyage itself was most enjoyable. In distinct contrast to the Hawaiians, this island rises to the amazing height of about 4 feet above sea level. The foliage has been almost completely destroyed by the activities necessary to occupy this godforsaken strip of land. There is much sand, coral, sun, and surf, but aside from that, there is not much to see. We have movies every night, rain or shine. When it rains here, I think the sky simply opens up and unloads the works all at once. I have sat through many movies out here in the open when it was raining so hard that most anyone with any sense would have known enough to leave. When you stop and consider all the food that we get, to eat must be shipped great distances, it is surprisingly good. We have ice cream every now and then and fresh meat frequently. Fresh vegetables are, of course, out of the question. I think the thing I miss in my diet more than anything else is fresh milk. I should like to take this opportunity to thank you for putting me to work while I was in San Diego. I enjoyed it very much, and I hope I earned what money I drew. I only regret that I was unable to continue longer than I did. Please thank Mrs. Anderson, too, for the most excellent meal she prepared for us. It was a very fine gesture worth more to a fellow in the service than money can buy. Regardless of how much a fellow earns, he seldom gets the opportunity to taste such delicious home cooking. Please give Swede and Corky my best regards and that very nice couple whose names have slipped my mind. If I am again stationed in San Diego, I'd like to work for you again. At any rate, I'll drop in and see you about a year from this coming spring if I'm lucky enough to not meet any accidents between now and then. I hope this letter finds you in the best of health and your business flourishing. Sincerely, Bill Simons. P.S. Tell Junior, that's my dad, to stay out of the fish pond. Because we had a fish pond. And my dad would have been, at the time that this letter was written, my dad would have been 4 and a half. But they did have a big koi pond in front of the nursery, and apparently he fell in it one time. So, but anyway, this letter was written in Gebe at Eniwetok Atoll. And shortly after this letter was written, the entire squadron moved to Okinawa.
Wow.
And spent the rest of the war on Okinawa.
It's a very articulate letter.
He writes very well. Yeah. So I've always thought that was a very interesting insight.
And he had keen observations about foliage and plants. And a great letter, very articulate.
Yeah. And very descriptive about the sea. I mean, it was beautiful.
And it also made me want to go to sea, but that's another story for another time.
Well, we've got three seafaring people here at this table.
I'm due to go back to Hawaii at some point here in the near future, hopefully. It's been too long since I've been over there. It's an absolutely beautiful place. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. You know, we touched on earlier in the last segment, dormant spraying. And along with dormant spraying comes your pruning of roses and fruit trees and everything else. So the other thing that you need to cut back, or you should cut back this time of the year, if you haven't done it yet, is cut back your tropical milkweed. It reduces the amount of the OE, I can't remember what it stands for.
It's a protozoa, and the disease is OE.
The disease is OE. So, you know, it reduces that instance. It encourages the monarchs to move on in what their normal migration would be. Doesn't have them stick around. There was a very interesting article that came out in October from the Texas Butterfly Ranch, which, if you have an interest in monarch butterflies, I find their research and their articles and the information that they have to be some of the most interesting, and I think some of the best that's out there. In some ways it kind of bucks what the more mainstream people are saying, but I find all of the information that they have is written by people that, from what I see, look like they know what they're doing, from very, very good entomologists, and that. But one of the article that I had seen was, monarch migration may be at risk, the butterflies themselves are not. And for whatever reason, whether it's climate change, influence of expansion of civilization into their habitats, planting tropical milkweed along in other areas, the monarch populations themselves don't appear to be endangered, but their flights every year, their migration patterns are dwindling. And they said some of that is because they're evolving. They're they're adapting to what's the new normal. And I find that very, I found that very interesting that they're changing, and you may lose the migration, or you're going to lose some of the migration, but they're realizing that why go through this horrendously difficult and usually deadly migration when they can just hang out where they're at and live their best life.
So instead of migrations, they're doing staycations.
I guess that's what it is. They raise the kids in San Diego, so they stay.
And if I were a monarch butterfly, I don't think I could find a better place to be than Pacific Grove, you know, the, which was sort of the terminal point for the big migration from Mexico up to Central Coast. If I could just stay at Carmel year round, I think I'd do that.
There's worse places that you could be. They did have an interesting map that showed the, that showed some of the migrations north, and there was most of it's in the Midwest, with only just a couple of spots in California.
So, well, I think one of the things that, you know, I think we forget sometimes that humans are a part of the ecosystem too. Mm-hmm. We are altering many things by our presence, by the disruption of native habitats and natural areas. You know, in Southern California, my goodness, everything's getting paved over. But one of the things we are doing that's beneficial, I think, is that people are bearing in mind that they can plant to sustain butterflies. Mm-hmm. So people in their home gardens now are planting various kinds of milkweeds, even native milkweeds, and fennel, and, you know, just so many beautiful plants in their garden that they can nourish these butterflies with. And I think that that's probably affecting some of the migration patterns too, is that there's a good food supply all the time now.
They don't have to travel to eat. There really is.
We have a fairly big section of our yard that's planted specifically for butterflies. And the biggest problem that I have with monarchs, which I absolutely love, and we had native milkweed, we had tropical milkweed growing in there specifically for the monarchs. But I think I'm going to take most of the milkweeds out. I'll leave the other plants there for the monarchs to feed on, because they will feed on other, they'll feed on other flowers other than milkweed, but they'll only lay their eggs on milkweed.
Right.
The problem that I have is that I've had tachinid flies invade my yard. Mm-hmm. And I don't think I had one monarch complete its life cycle in my yard. And we had lots of chrysalis. But the tachinid flies are parasitizing them. So I think I'm going to take the milkweed out, at least for this season. And hopefully the monarchs will still come and feed on all the other salvias and everything else that we have there. But they won't breed in my yard. And hopefully after a season or maybe two of not hosting them for reproduction, the tachinid fly population will drop off or disappear, because they won't have anything to.
So what you're saying is you'd rather have butterflies than flies
and tech
than tachinid flies. It's so disappointing, because we would spot the chrysalis all over the yard, because they never metamorphose on anything else, on your lawn chair, on a bucket.
Yeah, but not on the milkweed.
But not on milkweed. Right. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So they're all over the, they're all around the milkweed. They're everywhere. But we would see one pop up, and then a few days later it was black.
Yeah.
You could see the hole in it where the fly or the larva that had already been in ingested by it or whatever had come out. So I'm gonna try to reduce the tachinid flies in the area to keep it going.
One of the more common questions, you know, in our group on Facebook, San Diego Gardener, which I think we're up to 21,000 people now of only San Diego residents, which is mind boggling to me. But one of the more common questions is the larva for the giant swallowtail butterflies. Mm-hmm. People tend to, can I say this? If you're unsure what it is, leave it in situ. Don't take it off, because people will take pictures and say, oh, look what I took off of my citrus tree. What is it? And then it's like, why did you disrupt the poor little thing?
Yeah.
And they call, you know, that's called the bird poop.
Yeah.
Caterpillar.
Because that's what it looks like.
Right. It looks like bird poop. And it makes, though, the most beautiful giant, it's a giant swallowtail butterfly, black and yellow. They're spectacular. And if you see those, don't take them off your citrus. They will not denude your citrus tree.
No, they don't.
Very little. and they will do zero harm, and they're spectacularly beautiful.
We will take them when we find them here on the nursery stock. We'll take them out to our larger citrus out front so that they can continue on their journey.
It's not like when you have, when they're not as prolific in reproduction like monarchs are. Monarchs are voracious. Mm-hmm. They will absolutely wipe out milkweed. And it seems like the bigger the milkweed plant, the more eggs they lay. Mm-hmm. So the faster it gets wiped out.
It's denuded.
But that's not going to happen with the swallowtail. So if you if you do come across a swallowtail, like you said, my advice also would be just let it go. It's not going to cause any major damage.
But there are two types of swallowtails out here. That one is the giant, then the other one that feeds on the anise, the fennel, parsley, and dill.
I think isn't it anise swallowtail?
Yes, it is.
It's gorgeous. Yeah.
That's where we used to see them. There was a lot of anise growing in Bay Park. A lot of the neighborhoods had dirt alleyways in between.
We called it wild licorice when we were kids.
Yeah, exactly.
Wasn't it wild fennel though?
Yeah, it was.
It was all over the place, all over the place. And there was, I remember riding our bikes up and down the alleys, and there was always swallowtails around, and always larva in the
I would move them from my parsley and go put them on the wild fennel that was growing as weeds everywhere.
You know, another terrific butterfly for our area that's easy to attract to your garden is the Gulf fritillary. And all you need to do is plant some passion vine, and you'll have more Gulf fritillaries than you know what to do with. And by the way, passion vine grows so fast, there's no way they're going to do any harm. You're going to get more than enough passion fruit. But
and one of the more ugly caterpillars.
They are ugly, but a beautiful butterfly.
Gorgeous butterfly.
Well, you know, it's funny you talk about the passion vines and butterflies. I think it's in Boynton Beach, Florida, there is a butterfly conservatory. We went there a long time, 17, 18 years ago, when we were back visiting family. It's a huge conservatory, and it's almost all open air because of the climate. So they have the bug screening, and it's a USDA certified insectarium, I guess you would call it. But the guy that started it, his passion in plants was passion vines. And he actually wrote a book about passion vines. It's about an inch thick, and throughout the enclosure he has passion vines from all over the world in various different flower forms, and it's really quite something to see when you get back there. If you like passion vines, that should be a must do on your vacation list, is to go and check that out. And
I remember you speaking of it last time, or when you came back rather, but I have a question. When you said passion vine, I have regular Passiflora edulis and then the Cerulea. I've never had a Gulf fritillary go to the edulis.
That's true.
But they love the others.
They do.
I've never had them.
And the Fredericks. There's a few others they really like, but you're correct.
Yeah. Any of the real edible ones, I've not had a problem with them eating it, but they will devour the others.
You know, the passion vines, it reminds me of an article I wrote a number of years ago that I published online about a fellow in Pacific Beach named Kuhlmann. He was a doctor, a former missionary, and he came to Pacific Beach down on Hornblende Street, and he had a giant passion vine farm, and then up onto Mount Soledad. And he made a ton of money raising passion vine here in San Diego, maybe in the 1920s.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah, very. I'll have to republish.
I'll have to look at that.
Yeah, I'd love to see that. Yeah, very interesting.
You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to take a quick break. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and John Clements. If you'd like to ask a question of us, since we record the show now, we can't take calls, but we are more than happy to read an email from you. So if you want to drop us a question, we will answer it on a on a future show, you can email us at gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. And remember, Anderson is spelled S-E-N. If you don't spell it S-E-N, there's another Walter Anderson who spells it S-O-N, who has walteranderson.com with an O, who from time to time forwards us email that he has gotten. But gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. We'd be more than happy to hear from you if you have suggestions for the show. Or people you'd like to see us talk to, please let us know. We were talking about milkweed, and we were talking about butterflies. And basically, now is a good time to talk about what you should be putting in your yard as far as fall planting is concerned. Whether, you know, annuals are going to be changing out to the cool season annuals, you can still put some perennials in your yard. Great time to plant.
Bulbs,
natives, and bulbs, yep. Strawberries,
yeah. Pretty much everything,
garlic, right? Yeah. Onions, all kinds of stuff. So, as a matter of fact, speaking of fall color, we had mentioned last week, we were at opening day at the track, and the track is gorgeous. Mm. The buildings and the areas around it are absolutely gorgeous. The horse walkway from the paddock area out to the track, along the sides of it in the sunny areas, is purple and yellow violas in a checkerboard pattern. Oh, and everything's in full bloom. It's really, really pretty. But those violas, which are a great cool season border plant, now's the time to put those in to get them really looking good. The other thing that you can do too, when you're planting your annuals, is get some paper whites or daffodils, especially mm-hmm. daffodils. Plant them deep. Plant them about 8 or 10 inches deep. They're going to be deep enough that you're not going to disturb them every year when you go to put in, whether it's pansies or violas or whatever you're going to plant for your borders. But they will come up through the plants, and daffodils are some of the first spring flowers to come up, mm-hmm. And they'll naturalize. They'll come up mm-hmm. every year. So once you put them in, then you don't have to worry about it anymore. Yep. But now is a fantastic time to start taking a look at bulbs.
This is the best time of year for back in the day, 40 years ago, we were planting basically English border gardens everywhere, lots and lots of flowers. We didn't worry about water back then. We didn't put in succulents, but I did at Point Loma College at SeaWorld when it was doing landscape there, Iceland poppies, and fronting that with the little Johnny jump ups of different mm-hmm. colors. What a spectacular look, dark purple with all the Iceland poppies in the back, the Atacali. At Point Loma College, we bought thousands of not the Dutch tulips, the Darwins, the big ones, but Clusiana, which will actually naturalize.
The smaller ones.
It's very smaller ones. They're only about a foot high, but it's a beautiful pink and white, a gorgeous small species tulip. And if you put those in the front row, put your daffodils and things in the back row. Right now, I was at Point Loma store. There were in bloom now some of the most beautiful repeating bearded iris. And mm-hmm. bearded iris have everything going for them. It gives you a different texture. You don't want everything the same. You want a pop of some nice sword-shaped foliage. Mm-hmm. And they were in bloom now.
Yeah.
Victoria Falls bearded iris is probably my favorite bearded iris. And reliably, I would have that in bloom on Thanksgiving and Christmas every year. That'll bloom 6 times a year. So if you are still you're sold on the flower borders, I am still. I still like them in a small space. This is the time to do this.
Well, what are some other annual bedding plants that you like? Because I have a handful that I like.
Well, what do you like, George?
I like pansies. I love snapdragons, although they are susceptible to rust, but I love snapdragons. Allyson. My Australian friends called it. They had a different way of saying it, Alisum or something. Anyway, I'd love that.
And it smells good.
It has a great like honey scent.
Stocks.
Stock is another one. And then I was going to say sweet peas, obviously. Yeah. We talked about that in one of the previous shows.
Yeah, this is the time to put sweet peas in.
Sweet peas from seed right now.
Yeah.
And Arctotis is another. That's a perennial, but in a mixed border bed, Arctotis is spectacular.
Which is also very drought tolerant.
Oh, it is very drought tolerant. But this time of year, it'll take a fair amount of water, but it will also really survive a lot of drought.
It looks better with water, but it'll survive. That's another one. I'm sorry, Ken. But that's one of those plants, so that when you say African daisy, it's like one of the 37 African daisies. I made that number up. But there are a lot of plants called African daisies, and that's one of them as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Osteospermum is African daisy as well, but there's all kinds of them. You know, this time of the year, one of my favorite plants, and it's getting color and shade is sometimes difficult, especially in bedding plants. But this time of the year, English primroses.
Absolutely
spectacular color. It's low growing. It's not going to get big.
And fragrant.
And very fragrant.
Very fragrant. Yeah. Very bright colors. And you know, years and years ago, this is 40 years ago, I used to get all of my Primula maculata at the Point Loma store. And that's the fairy primrose.
The fairy primrose.
You just don't see it anymore.
No, not as much.
You just don't see it. But fragrant, beautiful, blooms a long time. That's a beautiful plant.
Cyclamen for a shaded border.
Yeah, it's very drought tolerant, by the way. Very drought tolerant.
There used to be the only thing we ever bought from them, they were in Encinitas, and I think they were off of Santa Fe Avenue. And we would buy it by the truckload, and when it was in season, Tuttle Farms used to grow cyclamen.
Yep.
And they grew them in six inch terracotta pots. Because I remember we would go up there and we would load an entire truck full of cyclamen and bring them down to the San Diego store, and unsleeving those things, you just got so filthy because the pots were completely covered with moss. The pots are probably worth more than the plants were, just to get, I keep trying to think of the word.
The patina.
But the pots were just completely covered with moss, and it was beautiful. You'd have the terracotta color peeking through. You'd have the dark green of the moss, and then you had that beautiful tessellated foliage of the primrose cyclamen, and then the huge head of flowers on top of it. I've always liked cyclamen. I think
they're beautiful.
The foliage is pretty. The flowers are interesting. They're unique. And the dwarf cyclamen are actually, some of them are extremely fragrant.
They are.
The big ones, not so much, but the little ones are.
Have you seen them coming back though? Do they come back?
Yeah.
With proper care.
Yeah. If you take care of them well and mulch them well, they'll come back. And I noticed in both stores, Point Loma and here in Poway, the bulb selection is fantastic right now.
Yeah.
And a lot of repeating bearded iris available, still tulips and things. Get to the store, buy bulbs now, because there's nothing better to me then you have a mixed border where you've got perennials, annuals, and then also bulbs that make an appearance popping up through things. That really makes, for me, the classic border in terms of a flower garden. And this is a time to get them in the ground.
Yeah. One, talking about bulbs this time of the year, one thing I learned a long, long, long time ago was if you're going to plant tulips, you need more than five or six. You have to plant them en masse.
En masse. Right.
And when you plant them en masse, it is absolutely spectacular when they are in bloom. And when you see them growing tulips over in Holland, that's how they are. It's just thousands. Massive plantings of them. Yeah. So that's something to look at. Over the past few months, I've been going through a bunch of my grandfather took slides like crazy. We have thousands and thousands of slides, and I've been going through and scanning them and sorting some of them out. I'll have to show some of them to you, but he has lots and lots of pictures of the flower fields up in North County from the 40s and 50s. Wow. And it's completely different than it is now. And I remember as a kid when we'd go to the flower fields, there was nothing there except for the flower fields. Mm-hmm. And you didn't have to pay to go in the flower fields. You just walked into the fields. Yeah. But there's some of the fields that I've spotted that actually look like they might be on Camp Pendleton. Mm-hmm. And as you're going up 5 North, just as you go by the bridge over the Santa Margarita River, there's a railroad siding there, and there's a windbreak of eucalyptus trees that's parked along, that's planted along there. It looks like that was flower fields at one point in time, as far as you can see. It's just flowers. It's pretty.
Well, that used to be amazing. Tomatoes.
It did on the west side.
On the west side.
On the west side of life for decades, it was tomatoes.
Yeah. But those slides would be valuable for like the San Diego. I know on the Facebook page, you do the San Diego historical stuff. That would be, those would be some wonderful.
To have.
For ours and San Diego Gardner page as well.
Yeah. And, you know, speaking of the slides, the fair is undergoing not a rebranding, but an overhaul. They want to change the experience at the Del Mar Fair, and I'm on the committee that's been working on that. And one of the other things that I found going through these slides is photographs of the flower show from
spectacular
the 40s and 50s.
It was so wonderful.
Up until they built the O'Brien Pavilion, that's the thing that really changed it. But before that, it was amazing. Mm-hmm. It was absolutely amazing what we would do as part of that flower show.
Every year it dwindles a little more.
A little more.
There are more vendors and less flowers.
Yeah. Right. But you look at the horticultural industry in general.
Shrinking.
It's shrinking.
Yeah. Yeah, it is.
I found an exhibitor list from 1984, which was, I think, 2 or 3 years. I think they built the O'Brien Pavilion in 81 or 82. Mm-hmm. But it was a layout of the flower show. It was significantly larger than it is now. And a lot more exhibitors in it. But the Wild Animal Park used to put in an exhibit. Yeah. SeaWorld would put in an exhibit. Mm-hmm. There were a lot of other nurseries.
Landscapers
would do it. Yeah. Other nurseries and wholesale nurseries. Mm-hmm. There actually used to be a division, and I know I've mentioned this before, there was a division in the flower show specifically for fuchsias. Mm-hmm. And we had at least two nurseries in San Diego that grew fuchsias. Mm-hmm. That's what they specialized in. It was Stubbs and Fire Mountain.
Yeah.
And then they also had retail booths on the main midway up through the front.
Wow.
They would sell those plants there.
Well, I hope it improves.
I think it will.
You know, that'd be a wonderful thing to aim for.
Yeah, I think it will. You're listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. We're going to be back with more right after this.
There is more Garden Talk on the way. Welcome back to Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery. Now, here's your hosts, Ken Anderson and George Allman.
And we're back with more Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson along with George Allman and our guest, John Clements. And we were talking about fall planting and fall bedding.
And bedding plants.
And just some of your favorite stuff to plant this time of the year. And you had an interesting one.
Yeah, one I forgot to mention. We were talking about the colorful, you know, plants, but chives.
Mm-hmm.
I like putting chives in there. Well, we have it in an herb garden that's a mixed flower herb garden, but they're a beautiful plant. You get those spikes of green, but then you get those little purple flowers on top.
The little puffballs. Mm-hmm.
And they look great in a garden, in a flower bed. Mm-hmm.
You know, don't forget that many herbs really look great in a mixed border. African blue basil is a great filler plant. Many types of rosemary, you know, Tuscan blue is great. You get these spires that go up. There's one called barbecue, you know, it has these
much more upright.
They look great in a mixed border. Thyme on the edge of a border is very beautiful, but also very fragrant.
And it takes the edge off of the sharpness of any kind of
And we are into the season. I always like to talk about food, but this is the time of year when you must take rosemary and thyme and chop that together with salt, pepper, garlic, and then put that on your prime rib. Rub in this fragrance of the rosemary and thyme together, or on your poultry.
Yes. I like lemon garden. Thyme for that. Lemon
that's
thyme
very
and chicken
good.
Is phenomenal.
Oh, it's good.
Oregano and marjoram, those look great in an herb garden. But there are lots of things to.
And oregano almost looks like moneywort.
Mm-hmm.
It grows very
taller, right?
A little bit taller, but has that same kind of foliage to it. But man, the taste of fresh oregano compared to dried oregano. And I know there are some recipes where they tell you don't use fresh oregano because it's too
overpowering.
Overpowering.
Well, you know, it's something about all the senses come together in a garden. You know, I want the touch, the sight, the smell. And, you know, I also really enjoy fragrant things in the mixed border. At the Point Loma store, I saw heliotrope. And I think probably have it here too at Poway. That makes a terrific perennial. It will persist. You can get 3-4 years out of a heliotrope. It smells like vanilla cookies. And it's one of the most fragrant plants you can have in a mixed border. I think they're spectacular.
Yeah, and I think there's a few different colors available now too. It used to just be
lavender, purple.
But they take some shade.
Out here.
They don't do as well in full
it'll
sun.
It'll do full sun on the coast. Even Carmel Valley, Penasquitos, I find it'll do okay. They also had probably my favorite sage for borders. And a kind of a mixed flower border is Waverly White Salvia.
I like that one as well. I have that in the PQ house.
So pretty. Sort of a greeny gray foliage, but then a white lavender purple flower. And it really looks very, very classy. It just holds itself really well and doesn't get ratty looking like some of the other sages. So there's so many things you can do now. Both stores are full of really marvelous subject matter to really compose some beautiful living painting in your garden.
This palette to play with. Using, yeah.
And, well, you know, you're talking about thyme. You can also use thyme as an actual ground cover. I've heard people have used it to replace a lawn. It seems like it's a little too big.
The officinalis, the actual herb one, because
that's a good. There's woolly thyme.
There's elfin thyme. There are a number of others that might work well, but not the culinary one.
Between stepping stones or flagstone, it's maybe pretty good material, right. but not really as a
not for a big surface area. Yeah,
but it's also time for doing your veggie gardens right now.
The winter vegetables.
Winter vegetables look spectacular in the stores. Nice six packs, a lot of good 4-inch. And, you know, back in 1988, I was in Sunset Magazine. We were sort of ahead of the curve. People didn't used to have raised beds for vegetables. And Tom and Janie Olson in Scripps Ranch, I had done a really huge raised bed area. And we made it into Sunset Magazine. And it was the first time I was ever able to get Chandler strawberries for them.
Oh, those are good.
That's a good strawberry.
That's a good one.
That is such a good strawberry. And the store is full of nice six packs of various types of strawberries right now, but Chandler is probably my favorite to this day for a really large fruit. It really bears over a long period of time, and most of the stuff now in the nursery is giving fruit. But if you put those strawberries in now, don't wait till March, April, May to put them in. Put them in now. They will set roots. They will get big, and you're not really going to hit your stride with strawberries till about year two or three, but get them in now in fall. They will do much better for you.
Yeah. I remember we used to recommend, and we used to sell a lot of it, black plastic, putting black plastic down, preparing the soil underneath, watering it really good, putting black plastic down, then cutting in small X's, like a 4-inch X, and then planting your strawberries in that. And then as they grow, the black plastic heats the soil up, so the roots just grow like crazy underneath of it, and to get established. But then when they're fruiting, the fruit's not laying on the ground. It's laying on the plastic,
right?
Which
less
keeps
susceptible.
Less susceptible to sow bugs and earwigs and slugs and snails. I can't remember who did it, but they planted a bed of strawberries with the plastic and a bed of strawberries without the plastic, same varieties. And the ones with the plastic were 2 to 3 times the size after the same amount of time. It was dramatic. And then I know up in Carlsbad and some of the strawberry growers up there, they grow them with furrows between, and the furrows are like 18 inches deep, but it's basically a raised planter.
Right.
So you don't have to crawl around on the ground and harvest your strawberries. You're just going to lean over and fill up the basket, and you can walk down the aisle. Not a lot of people have that much room or that much space to do it, but it's interesting to see the commercial growers how they do that. And Melanie, when we were up in Northern California, Melanie got a strawberry. We stopped at a fruit stand somewhere, and she got some strawberries that were just incredible, just absolutely amazing. So yeah, they're out there when
and keeping the strawberries away from soil contact is so important, because you will lose half your crop typically to sow bugs. And so you really need to suspend that fruit. The other trick, to take a plastic fork and suspend the stem that the strawberries are on and prop the end of the fork so that it's elevated and up off the ground. And you can reuse, you don't want to have too much plastic in your garden, but you can reuse those over and over again. Or you can get
an interesting idea.
Disposable wooden forks and do the same thing where you can just keep them suspended and save
a lot of work.
It's a little bit of work. It depends on how worth it is to you.
It's Sluggo Plus all around. It has spinosad in it and it will kill your
cold
bugs and the sow bugs.
The easy way, George.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm a lazy gardener, so.
Speaking of strawberries, at the farm in the infield of the fair last year, Rich, who's worked for the fair for years, he's the one that heads up the farm now. He grows absolutely spectacular stuff for the farm, but he had big planters full of strawberries. And what he had done, and you can do that very easily this time of year if you're going to put your strawberries in, is he interspersed garlic as a companion plant. And the fragrance that the garlic naturally gives off can be repellent to some pests. So he had garlic popping up all over in his raised planters. And so you get your strawberries, which hopefully will be a little bit more pest free, and you get garlic. And it's super easy to grow. And we have a lot of it in stock right now. You just go and plug it into you can put it in just about anywhere in your yard. And we were walking around the neighborhood the other night, and we stopped off at one of our neighbors who was outside, and we were talking to them, and I notice it more at night, but Society garlic, the nocturnal fragrance on Society garlic is really strong. We were standing in his driveway. We were several feet away from the plants, and you couldn't even see them. It was so dark, but you could smell them.
I would think someone must have brushed it in some way.
Maybe,
because I don't think I've had it for decades, and I've never noticed the scent unless it's been touched. You know, somebody ran through it, a dog ran through it or something.
Yeah, maybe his gardeners had come that day and cut it back or something. But
I cook with that. I dice it up like a chicken.
Really?
Yeah, you mentioned that. Yeah.
It's
Society garlic?
Yes, sir.
Yeah. With the foliage or the
just the foliage, just like taking a garlic stem or a scallion.
Well, I don't see why you couldn't, but that's interesting. I had never thought about
it. It's one of those things where some people love it and some people find it repellent. I actually find the smell of Tullabagi, of the Society garlic, repellent to me.
I had a neighbor like that. Yeah. He always would jokingly yell over the fence when I weed whacked it. Stop doing that.
No, there are some varieties though that, rather than that very pungent aroma, have a leaf form more like an agapanthus, and the flowers are very sweetly fragrant. I think it's Tullabagia fragrans. There's two varieties, a white and a pink, from South Africa, and they're really neat. And you don't see them very often, but you can get them.
Interesting. I'll have to
keep an eye out for that.
Yeah. Keep an eye out for that. You know what? Had a very brief comeback about 5 or 6 years ago, and then it just completely disappeared again. I think it ended up in some of the culinary magazines. Was ramps?
Yes.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. And we had them. We sourced them out, and we got them, and nobody bought them because nobody knew what they were.
Right. Hardneck garlics.
But they were had a brief, very brief window of popularity. I think it was about 2018. I think somewhere around there.
They are delicious.
I don't think I've ever had one.
Yeah, they're very good.
Yeah, if you grow the hardneck, you'll get them.
So is that what it is?
You just grow hardneck garlic, and they'll develop on the top.
Oh, I will have to remember that. I'm trying to think if there is anything else. Well, God, there's just so much that you can put in your yard right now, and fall is really an excellent planting time. So if you have areas of your yard that you want to rejuvenate or rebuild or replant, now is a great time to do it. Yeah. And the selection is absolutely outstanding. You've been listening to Garden Talk here on KCBQ and KPRZ. I'm Ken Anderson, along with George Hallman and John Clements. We'll be back next week with another hour of Garden Talk. Have a great weekend, everybody.
Thank you for joining us on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery, your source for gardening, landscaping, and horticultural news. Still have a question for the Garden Talk crew, or want to learn more about the show or how to become a guest or sponsor? Send an email to gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com. That's gardentalkradio@walteranderson.com, or visit walteranderson.com. There's more professional gardening advice next week at the same time on Garden Talk by Walter Anderson Nursery.